The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And let's go. Duff McKagan's joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho. This is Duff McKagan. I didn't want to believe my dad was stealing from his job as a road worker. But when I got home, all the signs were there. Thank you very much.
Yes, very, very nice. Wow. Duff is the man of many jokes, some of them good, most of them like that one. But he is a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, and he takes the time every single Friday, no matter where in the world he is or what he's doing, to phone in the joke of the week. Thanks to Duff and the rest of Guns N' Roses on tour, hitting the Philippines, Jakarta, Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Abu Dhabi in November. And Fozzy's Judas Rising tour is rolling on as well. I'll get to that in a minute, because right now, I got to tell you who's coming up on today's show. Brian Pillman II, the only son of one of the pioneers of high-flying and getting his character over, reinventing himself, the late, great Brian Pillman. Brian, number two, lost his dad when he was just 4 years old, but he remembers a couple things which he'll share. Brian's got a lot of his dad in him as well, as you're hearing the conversation coming up. Brian's also talking about making his own name in the business and how he came back to wrestling in the first place, and the advice he got from Pillman's close friend, Stone Cold Steve Austin. He trained with Lance Storm in Calgary. He talks about how he hooked up with Lance and what it was like training there. He's also talking about the recent knee injury he suffered that had him sidelined for a few months. He just came back. And what he planned to do in his downtime in the ring. Brian's got some goals for both New Japan and WWE and a plan on how to get there. Brian Pillman II coming up, and Fozzy coming to the Orpheum tonight in Tampa, September 28th. It's a hometown show for me in Florida, and we finish up the U.S. leg of the Judas Rising Tour Saturday night, Fort Lauderdale at the Culture Room tomorrow. And then we're playing the Rock Allegiance Show main stage, New Jersey, next Saturday, October 6th. And then we head to Australia and New Zealand, Auckland at the Studio, November 7th. Melbourne at Max Watts, November 9th, which is my birthday. The Manning in Sydney, November 10th. November 13th, Adelaide at the Gov. And November 14th, Brisbane at the Triffid. We will be there. Go check that out if you live in Australia or New Zealand. Then we're hooking up with 3 Days Grace for some dates on their Canadian tour. Moncton on November 21st, Halifax the 23rd, Quebec City the 24th, 25th Montreal, 26th Armprior, which is basically Ottawa, 27th is London, Ontario, 28th is Toronto, Ontario, then the 30th we go to Thunder Bay, December 1st at the Burton Cummings Theater, the Burt in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, my hometown. Other hometown show for me. Second, we're in Regina. Third is Edmonton at the Starlight Room. And the fourth, finishing the Judas Rising Tour after 19 months, is going to be in Calgary at the Gateway. Go to FozzyRock.com for all ticket info, including how to buy packages for one of Fozzy's VIP meet and greets. We're legendary, one of the best in the business. We play a mini concert for you. We take pictures, we sign stuff, we hang out with you. You get to meet Jack Slade. What more do you want? So go to FozzyRock.com for all information. All right. He's at Brian Flying Jr. on Twitter. He's live on Talk is Jericho right now. It's Brian Pillman II. Here we go. We're here with Brian Pillman II, which is very regal, but this is wrestling, so you're probably going to end up being Brian Pillman Jr. for a while.
Yeah, that's how it's ending up being promoted, and people are introducing me and announcing me as that. I originally tried to go with the second, for kind of like branding purposes. You know, I really like the idea of the Roman numerals, Roman numeral two, and stuff like that, and just trying to play onto that kind of that wrestling royalty idea. You know, like my father was in such a position of reverence and power in the industry, and it was kind of, you know, it was lost on me because, you know, when I was born, you know, he wasn't there, or, you know, he was there, but, you know, when I was like 4 years old, I lost him. So I kind of got removed from that kingdom, so to speak, of wrestling. So I'm just trying to find my place and just get back into the
Well, let's start about this. So, how old are you?
24.
24. So you just had your watch your leg there. If it's better for you to stretch it out that way, you can too. So you came limping on the bus like a grizzled old vet. Over there, 24. I know, but terrible. You just started though. This year, right?
Yeah, it's my very first match was December 30th of 2017.
Okay.
So I was like, you know what? We're going to end off the year with one big match. And I actually had like a dark match, so to speak, on December 18th, but I did it under a different name. So I tried, you know, Alex King was my name. You know, it was a tribute to my older sister, Alexis, who actually passed away. And my younger sister, Skylar, and her last name's King. So I was like, I'll be Alex King.
Perfect. But you, like you mentioned, so you're the son of Brian Pillman, the only son, correct?
Yeah.
And Brian had four children?
So my sister, all of the children are half siblings.
Okay. Yeah,
so
yeah.
My mother had Alexis and me and Jesse. And my dad had Danielle and Brittany. And Skylar is actually of no relation to him.
Okay.
So there's a little misconception online, I think on Wikipedia or something, where Skylar's listed as one of his children, but she's completely not biologically related to him.
Okay. So but your dad passed away when you were 4 years old.
Yes.
It's been 20 years ago already. Yep. Wow. Do you have any memories of your dad at all?
Yeah, I get that question a lot. And the one thing I can say I do remember is when he was wrestling in a dress on TV. I was very upset about that because, you know, I always thought my dad was the coolest, you know. Yeah. Like, he would never do that, you know. Right. I was like, this can't be real. And of course his voice, you know, you can never forget that voice. It's like he's screaming, you
right.
know, but he's not loud, you know what I mean? He has to scream just to be at a normal volume.
Because he had a throat injury or something along those lines?
Yeah, so just growing up, you know, he's just a young kid and he had polyps, which are like little throat tumors. Constantly had to be removed. He had, you know, could little throat whatever you call
nodules
it.
Or whatever.
Help you breathe. Yeah. Always got made fun of, you know, when he was younger and stuff. And I feel like that really hardened him up. It really
to help breathe.
Him
what do you mean? Did he have like a little like a tube in there?
Yeah, tube. Yeah.
Oh wow.
So it like it would stick out of his throat. That's why he had that scar.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Like a I can't remember what they call it, like a ventilator or whatever.
Yeah,
he actually had that in there.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So that kind of gave him that voice for his whole life.
Like you said, the scarring of over time, the constantly scraping out those little tumors and stuff.
So when growing up without him, as you open a Pabst Blue Ribbon, PBR.
Oh, yeah.
We're in Ohio, man. When did you start realizing that your dad was Brian Pillman?
It was actually not until I got into my 20s. You know, growing up, I knew he was a big deal in wrestling, and I knew that he was a famous person in that business, but I more or less thought people would forget about him. I kind of thought, oh, you know, those were different times now. You know, things are changing. Wrestling's so different now. Like, people would never, you know, they wouldn't remember him. And if they met me, they wouldn't know who Brian Pillman is. And I was completely wrong. I was so wrong about that. His followers and his fan base are just so, I want to say cult-like, but I want to say that in a good way. I want to say like a very passionate following. And it's almost unreal. Like, it wasn't until I was like 22 or 23 when I started reaching out. You know, I think I tweeted at Lance like, hey, are you accepting students? I'm thinking about getting into wrestling. And it was like somebody just saw that, screen capped it, wrote an article. I had 900 new followers like the next day.
I remember kind of hearing about this out of nowhere, because like you said, you did end up having a little bit of the thing with Lance, and was that just basically out of nowhere? Did you just think, I want to go to Calgary and train because that's kind of where your dad went to train? Or
I thought it would make a lot of sense, and two, I did my research, you know, and I was like, who's the best? Like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this all in. Who's the best trainer? You know, I don't want to go down and get hurt, you know, in some rusty old ring. I want to be in the most professional training right. environment. And obviously you can't just walk into the WWE Performance Center and say, oh, I'm Brian Pillman. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I was like, what's the most legitimate way to like pay my way and go do this? And I got in touch with Lance, and he sent me a nice lengthy email, which, you know, outlined all the pros and cons of this business. Cause I told him, I was like, look, I was kind of torn away from wrestling. I was more or less led to believe by my mother and family that it was bad for me and it was going to do all this harm to me and it killed my father and all that. And then you meet guys like Lance and guys like you that you know, didn't kill you. Mm-hmm. You're still making a good living. Obviously, two different parallels. You know, you guys both started together,
right?
But you went on different paths, but no destructive paths. And it's just like all these people that say wrestling's terrible are just wrong. And I finally realized that after more or less succeeding at being a normal person, you know, going to college, got my degree, you know, sat at a desk job making great money for a year. I was just like, you know what?
What are you doing?
I got my degree in information systems and business, like a minor in business. So I was working on databases for car dealerships all around the Western Hemisphere. So we worked with Canada, Mexico, and South America, and basically people that worked at car dealerships would have issues with their databases, you know, different things I'd have to fix with the accounting. I was specifically with the accounting end of the software, and I would, you know, help them out with that and solve problems. It was really a fun job because I do enjoy technology, but I kept going to the top of the cubicles and coming down on people with double axe handles, and they were like, look, you gotta get out of here. And I was like, yeah, you're right, I do. So
it was in your blood, and finally yeah. it was time. Yeah. Had you ever thought about being a wrestler? But you said when you were a kid, no. But when you've become an adult, did you start thinking, like, I really should try this? Or were you trying to still ignore those impulses?
I want to say I wish I would have started sooner, because I did have some earlier impulses when I was getting out of high school, you know, 18, 20 years old. But the social influence today is to go to college. All your teachers are telling you to go to college. And I saw what happened with my family and the risks that my father took and how our family ended up in ruins. And, you know, and the Pillman name, you know, could have more or less died off at that point. So right. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to make those, you know, I'm going to at least have a backup plan. I'm going to go to college and I'm going to do all these things that these teachers and everybody's telling me. And looking back, I don't regret it. I don't regret it at all. I think I learned a lot about technology and marketing and business in college, which is ultimately infinitely valuable in the wrestling world as well, as far as sure. social media and starting up a website, starting up a small business. I think every wrestler is just a small business. That's all we are. We're just trying to make our dues and stuff. So I don't regret going to college. I got some debt from it, but hopefully I can use those skills I learned and push forward with that in the wrestling.
So when you decided to go to Lance's school and he accepted you, what was it like for you to go to Calgary, for one, the famous wrestling city? And once again, like we said, the parallels of that's where Brian, your dad, went to learn how to wrestle. What was that experience like and the whole training and the aspect of that?
It was really cool going up to Calgary. As you know, as soon as people got word of it, you know, Bruce Hart was reaching out to me and stuff.
Oh, really?
And yeah, he's like, you know, come by the house and stuff. So I got to see where my dad used to live and stuff, and where he used to hang out. And I actually went to a club in Calgary, in the city, and the bouncer checked my passport and stuff, because I actually got robbed my third day in Calgary.
Really?
So I got there early. I got there on like Friday and practice started Monday, so I had the weekend to kind of hang out and get to see the city. And it was really beautiful too, because it was like in the beginning of September and like the terrible winter hadn't hit yet.
Yeah,
so it was
yeah.
like perfectly beautiful out. And I went and was going into the gym, and I hadn't picked up a lock yet for like my bag. And I was like, you know what, I'll just put my wallet in my car. So I go to put my wallet in my glove box, and I guess as I'm walking away, I hit unlock instead of lock, because I always kind of point at my car and lock it. And, some hobo or somebody must have seen me do that. And when I was in the gym, he just went in, took my wallet, lost my debit card, my driver's license, all kinds of stuff. So luckily I had my passport at the house, because, everybody's like, don't ever lose your passports. So I wouldn't even bring it out.
And that's what you guys, when you train with Lance, he has a house for the guys, right?
Yeah. So Lance has his house, which holds five students. It's pretty nice, actually. I wouldn't have mind staying there. A lot of the guys developed some pretty cool friendships there and stuff. But he also has a network of renters that you rent out. And I was staying with a woman that he, a pretty nice woman that he had rented out from. But yeah, I had my passport. Went to the club in Calgary. Super nice. You know, there's a lot of cool places there. The guy looks at my passport. He's like, cool name, bro. I was like, oh, thanks. He's like, you know, like the wrestler. I'm like, yeah, I know. And I'm walking. He's like, you know, you kind of look like him. You kind of built like him too. I was like, yeah, I get that a lot. And just walk, you know, totally no-sold him. I was just like, yeah, you know, I got, you know, this is a long line. I'll let, you know, but on the way out, I kind of, you know, I smartened him up. I was like, yeah, I'm up here training, you know, my dad. And he was actually really upset because he thought my father was a Calgary native. He thought he was born and raised in Calgary. I was like, no, he's from Cincinnati and that's where we're from.
But
and
there
all
was
that.
A lot of guys that they thought that they came from Calgary because that's where they started.
Oh, yeah.
You were
yeah.
born and raised there.
Yeah.
But that's the first thing I saw today, like when, you came to meet me. We were doing sound check here at the venue, and you know, we've got VIPs and stuff. And I'm kind of looking around, and then I'm like, I wonder, like, I kind of know what you look like, but not really. And as soon as you walked in, I'm like, man, you're built like Ryan Pillman,
just the wide shoulders,
shoulders, and like the stocky legs too. Yeah. It was just very interesting. You could see that right away, you know.
Yeah, not many people have a mullet either.
Yeah, what's the deal with the mullet? Yeah.
So actually, the deal with the mullet, we were at practice at Lance's, and he was giving, you know, he gives these lectures about just every aspect of the business, probably the most knowledgeable person in the business because he's just like a, you know, he's just like a computer,
sure,
you
absolutely.
Know? And he was like, mullets were actually a functional haircut, so you could keep the hair out of your eyes and still sell really well with your hair. And he's like, that's why I had a rat tail, because I didn't want all that hair, but I still wanted to be able to sell really well. And that's where, too, and then he always, you know, he goes on to something else. And
that's where you got the idea for the mullet, then?
Yeah, so I was like, you know what? It's going to be over as hell, so it's going to be functional. Yeah.
Thing.
Well, I was flipping my hair back at practice all the time.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I hate this. I hate doing that, and I don't have to do that now, so it's great. And,
but once again, too, though, that's a Brian Pillman haircut.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Grew it out a bit longer, and it's a bandanarama.
Yeah.
What would you think of training? How was that for you?
Training, to be honest, I expected slightly higher level of athletes up there.
Yeah.
But he did have about 20 kids, so I think in the past he was a little more selective on who he allowed to train there. But there was about 6 or 7 guys that were really, really keen, really smart, really good. But, you know, it wasn't as rigorous physically. You know, we did our conditioning and stuff, but it was very mental. You know, we had a lot of, like, you know, mental homework we had to work on. He wanted us to really think about the psychology and take it back to the roots of wrestling, because he's like, when you go out to these indie shows, he's like, people are going to tell you the wrong stuff. He's like, they're going to steer you the wrong way. He's like, I really want to drill this into your head, like how wrestling is supposed to be, like how you're supposed to be in the moment, and how a lot of, you know, the greater moments in wrestling happen when you do things on the fly, and when you really go out there and just believe it's real and just pretend you're in a fight. He's like, what would you do if this was a fight? Like, what would you actually, how would you naturally react? And he's like, if you just go out there and choreograph everything, and he's like, that's not going to, you know what I mean? It's not going to look as genuine. It's not going to look as intense. Like when I see, when I watch, like, you and Benoit in Japan, and it's just that intensity. And just even Japanese wrestling today, it's like, it looks like they're beating the hell out of each other. And they may or may not be. It might be a little bit stiffer than your average match, but it's just, they go out there and they just feel it out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Justin, and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
Did you play sports in high school at all, or in college, or?
So, I played high school football, and I was a linebacker for the first couple years, but I was only on JV. I wasn't as good at the passing game and all that, and reading the quarterback and all that. So, my coach was like, "Look, you're one of the meanest, hardest, you know, hitting dudes. We need you on this defense. Why don't you try defensive line?" So I went to the D line at 185 pounds, and I was just manhandling dudes. So it ended up being, I ended up being all star nose guard. My father played nose guard at Miami of Ohio. So I was just like, this is so cool. And there's just so many parallels. I'm not even trying to be like him, but it's, some things are
just
naturally.
Your father's son, yeah.
Truly, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, and that just comes to show. So, a lot of similarities with him. A lot of things different too. I ended up playing lacrosse. My dad played hockey, so hockey wasn't as prominent. Lacrosse was growing; it was starting to pick up in Northern Kentucky, and it was funny because the referees, because it was a new sport in Kentucky, more or less. It's more of a Northeastern Ivy League type of sport. they didn't know all the rules really. So I was taking my hard hitting football style into lacrosse, and they were just like, well, whatever, you know, like, yeah. I knocked some kid out because you don't have all the pads on. Right. You just have a few pads and you got a helmet. And I actually knocked myself out one time just hitting somebody as I would in football because I wasn't sure. Got into college, played college lacrosse, realized it's way more of a finesse sport. It's way more like soccer or basketball, totally not like football. And I was like, it's not for me, you know?
Yeah. So but did you take to wrestling training pretty naturally then?
Yeah, some things were natural, some things weren't, you know, definitely just because I was so separated from it growing up and, it, you know, it kind of left a sour taste in my mouth just watching it, you know what I mean? So the mental aspects, not so much. I still have a lot of homework I need to do on that. But, I mean, my first drop kick I ever threw, it was like Lance looked at it and he didn't say anything. And that's when you know you did it right. If he criticizes you, then you did it wrong. But if he just says, okay, then it's like, you know, you did it pretty good. So it's like some things like that, you know, springboard off the top rope, you know.
Air Pillman.
Easy, yeah. First try, just jump to the top.
Wow.
Yeah.
I could never do that.
Like springboard crossbody from like the inside turnbuckle, jump to the top. You know what I mean? Little things like that. Like I could jump really high. I can run pretty fast. Like I just have natural, explosive athleticism. But as Lance would say, he's like, you got all this power, you got all this explosiveness. He's like, you just need to control it, you know? You just need to slow down. He's always like, slow down, grab a hold, you know?
That's wrestling though, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, and I'm sure, I don't know if he told you this or not, but I mean, Lance was a big fan of your dad.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember literally when we were training back in 1990, the springboard at the clothesline off the top rope was not something that everybody did.
Yeah.
And it was called Air Pillman. I remember Lance going, oh, I'm going to do the Air Pillman today. I was like, oh, I bet you I could do it. And of course, I would fall every time, never got it right. And every time he would just be like, bing, boom, bing, boom. But that was him practicing the Air Pillman.
Yeah, I think it was Steve Gillespie. Ring a bell? He said, he's like, you know, I love Lance, but, you know, it really pissed me off. Every time I teach him one of my moves, he'd do it better than me his first try.
Gillespie didn't have a lot of moves. So. Did you meet a lot of people that knew your dad? You mentioned Bruce Hart. Did he tell you any stories?
It was cool. And, you know, he would talk about, you know, all the different things they used to do, different stories about the Stampede days. And it's funny because, like, things he would tell me and different people would tell me would end up in that book, too. So I'd be reading the book
by Liam O'Rourke, right?
I'd be like, oh, I heard about that already, firsthand from the people that were there. Just the different ribs, you know, the Calgary ribs. And some of these ribs were just vicious.
Tell us,
you know,
some
what I mean?
Of them. That you heard about.
Also, they said they were they tricked my dad into doing a. He hated like doing little press things, and they were like, yeah, we got you. You're gonna go to the seniors' home and do a speech and talk to all the, you know, the senior citizens and all that. And they like totally signed him up for this. And he was like, come on, guys, you know, I didn't want to do this. And I guess when he got back from it, they like. They dressed up a dog in all his wrestling gear, and they put a bucket of water on top of the door. So it's like he goes into the hotel or wherever they're staying, and bucket of water drops on him. There's a dog running around with all his wrestling gear on, and he's like, "What the heck's going on?" You know, just a good old Calgary rib and stuff.
Yeah.
And there's way worse ones, obviously. You know?
Well, yeah, but those are some of the more tamer ones. Yeah, exactly. Did you what did you think of I think it was just called Flying Brian, wasn't it? Liam O'Rourke's book.
Yeah, I think he called it Crazy Like a Fox.
Crazy Like a Fox.
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
yeah.
That's what it's called.
No, yeah, which is pretty cool.
Starting to read that at some point, and I forgot that I had it. So
when you
read these stories, because it was a very honest story about portrayal of your dad, right?
Yeah, very accurate. I talked to Steve Austin about it, and he said very accurate. You know, maybe one of the only things that wasn't so accurate was when they were forming the Hollywood Blondes. Dusty came and said, look, you guys are going to tag together. And I think in the book it mentions that Steve didn't want to do it, or he was kind of like politicking out of it. But he's like, no, I was totally for it from the get-go. He told me, he's like, when I came in, your dad was already a star. He's like, I looked up to him. He's like, I wanted to be a part of him. He's like, you walked into the gym and you knew he was somebody. You know what I mean? You just saw somebody that was a star and stuff. But so far, reading the book, it's awesome because you read this book about your father's life. You never knew your father, right? Never knew who he was. And you're reading about him and you're just like, is that like, it's so much like me, you know what I mean? Like just the stupid little antics I've done when I was younger and just my progression in wrestling and stuff. And I'm just like, wow, that's just something, I would do, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and I never had the chance to like mimic him or grow up being raised by him. It's just all natural. It's just all genetic.
Just all genetically, right.
Yeah, but I mean, Dave Meltzer, I think, rated that as like the best, or his website rather, rated as like the best wrestling book ever. And I think that's because it was written by somebody that's not a worker. It was written by a journalist. So it was more or less, it's as if like Dave wrote a book. You know what I mean? It's going to be more or less factual and less about exaggerating and making up, you know, cool stories and, you know, stuff. So it's like they're real stories and stuff. So.
And you said that you spoke to Steve. Did you call him or did you do his show or how did you get to know him?
Yeah, so Steve Austin's really the reason why I said screw it, I'm gonna get into wrestling.
What happened?
I was on Twitter and I really just liked or retweeted something random and he happened to have caught me on Twitter and just followed me and I was like, holy crap, I just got followed by Stone Cold Steve Austin. It was pretty cool. He DM'd me. He's like, hey buddy. Her brother, you know, I got this belt of your dad's. It wasn't a wrestling belt. It was a weightlifting belt, you know, what you do your squats or your deadlifts with. And it says flying on the back of it. It's at my house. I want you to have it. I'm going to mail it to you. Oh, I was like, cool. Wow. I was like, this is super cool, you know. So I get the belt and it's got one of the ranch, Broken Skull Ranch hats in it. So, you know, hooked me up a little merch too. And I'm like, wow, this is so cool. I put the belt on. Of course, it fits perfectly and all that. And I'm just like, well, if that's any sign to start looking into getting into wrestling, and I don't know what is, you know what I mean? You get your first belt, it's almost like getting your first championship belt,
yeah.
You know, it's like, but it's a weightlifting belt. So still. I kind of relate that to that. I still use it every day. Obviously it's really thick, durable leather, you know,
sure,
it'll go a long way. So I was like, that's so cool. And then after I just recently injured my knee, it was the weirdest thing ever. I was, you know, rock bottom, super, super upset. 3-4 months of bookings, just have to cancel, and I'm sitting at the end of my bed. This is like, you know, last Thursday or whatever, and I get a call from Steve just out of the blue, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm just like, perfect timing, I needed that. So he kind of gave me some advice on just the business and how he had his problems with his knee and stuff. And he's just like, he said, if there's one thing I can tell you about wrestling, he's like, it's just remember this AC/DC song. It's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. Did you hurt? Is this the knee that you hurt today?
Yeah. So my left knee. Yeah. I was just doing something simple, you know, good old kicks in the corner, and I thought I'd be a little innovative and do the little pop up off the bottom rope and you know, make it look a little more devastating. But I had just came to practice. I had CrossFit from 4 to 5, and it's an hour drive to Dayton. Practice was at 6:30, so literally just showered at CrossFit, came straight here, and you know, you get that runner's high when you do a high intensive workout. So I was just really ready to go. I actually had a crazy practice. I actually worked on I wanted to add the Northern Lights to my repertoire with the roll, you know, like the rollover that Ricochet does. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking maybe do that, but transition into something else, you know, just trying to add some moves. Cause you know, it's 2018. You got to have 50 moves. You know?
Yeah, that's right.
And training Lance was like, have 3 moves. And yeah. I was like, all right, drop kick, power slam, German. Like that's
right,
it.
That's all you
and
need.
That got me by for a while, but I'm like, I'm working all these indies. They want me to start slapping my leg and shit. I gotta step it up. So, you know, adding some different stuff. And then the last 10 minutes of practice, we're like, hey, you know, let's just do a little 6-man tag because there's just 6 of us in the ring and the older guys, like the coaches, had left or whatever, and some guys are doing promos in the other room, and they're like, yeah, just gotta go have some open ring time. All right, we'll have a little 6-man tag. And we were the heels working on some of the newer guys. I don't even think they've had any matches yet. We're just, you know, beating them up, putting some boots on them, and just having too much fun in the ring and not thinking. And it's funny because we try to tell ourselves, you know, don't think too hard, go out there and live in the moment and have fun. But sometimes that's when you get injured. And
every move you do, you have to be mm-hmm. paying attention.
The fundamentals.
So what did you do to it?
It was a hyperextension. So you know how your knee bends, it just bent the other way.
Yeah.
And came down on it. Like I said, I was popping off the bottom rope. When I landed, my leg was fully extended, and it went backwards the other way, and it pulled out my PCL, which fortunately is not as crucial as the ACL. They don't even repair it. So they said they're going to let that heal up. But he wants to go in surgically and just check on the meniscus. He said that they couldn't tell from the MRI whether the meniscus was torn or not, but they said there might be a root tear there. So they just want to make sure, because they were like, look, you're young. If we can fix up this meniscus and repair it surgically, we're going to do that, because if you don't, you might think you're fine. But over time,
you're
going to get arthritis, and by the time you're 40, you're going to need a knee replacement. So they're like, look, let us just take care of the meniscus if it needs it. If it doesn't need it, they're going to pull out, close it up. And
so how long you have to be out for?
So 3 months if the meniscus is fine. If they want to repair the meniscus, it's going to be 6 months total. The first 6 weeks, I'd be, you know, off of it. I had to do crutches and stuff.
It's frustrating when you're young. Oh, yeah. Especially, but because you just basically started your career. How many matches have you had?
So I've had about, I want to say 26.
Okay.
But I had like one night, I had like four matches in one night. But, you know, it was kind of all like a, you know, it was its own story. I kind of structured it as one big match. So I don't really count that as four whole matches. But yeah, I've had about 26, 27
Is
matches.
Is there a lot of work in this area?
Believe it or not, just being in Cincinnati, I'm so central that there's just within like a 4 to 5 hour circle, there's a lot of indies to work, a lot of places to go. A lot of people are curious to see what I can do in the ring and stuff. And you know, I was really nervous too. And Lance warned me about that, just having that name. He's like, people are going to tear you down, man. He's like, if you're bad, if you go out there and shit the bed, he's like, they're going to crucify you. And that really scared me. And I thought about wearing a mask. I thought about changing my name. Like I said, my very first match, I used a different name. And then when I went out there for the first time with my real, you know, with my real legal shoot name, I was like, you know what? These people don't hate me. They love me. You know, I'm not the best, obviously. But you know, my second or third match, I used Brian Pillman the second. And everywhere I've gone, people have wanted me to come back. So that's all I can ask for. I know there's a lot of rough edges to clean up, but if the fans are go home happy and they want to see me again and the bookers and promoters are happy, then I'm happy and everybody's
with, like
happy.
You said, what could be not a detriment, being the second generation, obviously you're going to get compared. Oh, yeah. But if you're good, that's going to help you being a Pillman.
Yeah.
If you're the shits, it's going to probably hurt you to be a Pillman. Yeah. He's just getting a chance. But it's like, if you can take that name value and harvest that, it's going to help your career.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's the good thing about it.
Yeah, and I got the pleasure of meeting Cody Rhodes when I was in Canada. He was booked on a show in Calgary, him and his girlfriend. Or fiance, wife, rather. Sorry, we're booked on a show up there, and he was like, "Hey, man, look, you know, I know all about it. You know, the guys like us, we're held to a higher expectation." And he's like, "It doesn't hurt you that your father passed away." He's like, "People, they miss him and stuff." He's like, you know, don't take advantage of it, but he's like, "It's not going to hurt you." He's like, He's like the fact that you're somebody that's trying to start, you know, and you're trying to pay your dues and go to the right training and stuff. He's like, you're doing all the right things, you know. So he was really nice to meet and talk to. We sat down on the floor and, you know, had a nice little talk about that.
There's so many second generation wrestlers. I mean, you look at Orton and you look at, you know, all the Samoan guys, Roman Reigns, everybody like that. Once in a while, you'll get a guy like a David Flair that just doesn't connect, but I found that most second generation wrestlers are pretty good. And even though you didn't grow up in the business per se, you mentioned before, it's just in your genes.
Yeah.
You know, genetically, it's cut out for it. You know, where was your first match?
So my very, very first match as Alex King was in the CWAI warehouse against Cody Hawk, who was actually the trainer of Dean Ambrose. So his credibility goes there. And it was really cool, you know, call it all on the fly. That's how those older guys are. And to me, that's a really intense and fun way to wrestle. And then my second match ever was December 30th. I was like, look, I'm coming out. Brian Pillman the second. Wrestled a kid that was 18 years old, had already been wrestling 3 years. Super knowledgeable, you know. We spotted out a bunch of cool stuff. I actually did a springboard sunset flip, which Lance told me to do. He's like, "Look, do this. Nobody does this." He's like, "Nobody actually goes up to the top and does a sunset flip. They're gonna think you're gonna go for like a move, but you're gonna, you know, catch him in a pin." I was like, "All right." So I did that. Actually, did your move, which people I guess call it the triangle drop kick or the springboard drop kick.
I watched it on Twitter and I was like, he did it better than I did. Yeah. I always love when it's called the triangle drop kick. I'm like, really?
Who worked at that?
I invented it and I never called it that. So actually, I did invent it. Ultimo Dragon was the first guy ever saw do that from the second rope, but I used to do it right from the top.
Oh, okay.
And then as I got older and I would fell a couple times.
Oh, like you would actually run and jump to
straight
top.
To the top.
Oh,
yeah.
Without a post or
nothing.
A flag
and
or
then
anything.
I realized it's the same. Yeah. Is when you do it from the second.
It's funny you bring that up, that you quit doing it from the top. I was looking at some of your old Japan stuff, and you did the lion salt to the outside of the ring. And I know, did you stop doing that because
from a triangle position, like running, like you're going to do the drop kick from the second, but then flipping over the top. And I don't remember who gave me the idea for that. I did that for years, but the last time I did it was a pay per view I had against Benoit in '96. I think it was my first WCW pay per view, and I tried it. And I misjudged it. I came down kind of on the apron side, and it was like, that's enough for that one.
Yeah, it looks risky. That's
but
why I was
I
like, I think
it,
you quit doing
all
it.
All throughout 94, 94 and 95.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but you know, when you're younger, you just do that crazy shit, you know? What kind of stuff do you do? Because obviously your dad was one of the pioneers of high flying. You look back now and it's very archaic. It's
almost laughable. Yeah. Yeah.
But is that your style? Are you flying like he was? Or what's
I really enjoy looking at guys that are, you know, current wrestlers today that are my size, my height, you know, what they're doing, kind of that hybrid style, you know, guys like Kenny Omega, guys like yourself that can kind of do it all. And Lance kind of broke that down to me. He's like, look, you're not huge. You're not small. You're right down the middle. He's like, you're going to have to do whatever people want you to do, whatever it calls for, big man matches, little man matches. He's like, just try to learn everything. I was very curious about, you know, more of the technical side. You know, like I wanted to learn different leg holds and stuff like that. But I do have a pretty nice drop kick. I like to utilize that. I like to utilize a good snap power slam, kind of taking a page out of Randy Orton's book. And I wanted to... Lance says I wanted to learn a German, but he told me, he's like, don't do a German if you're just going to land on your back and then bridge up. He's like, it's not a German. He's like, a real German is when you land in the bridge on your head and it looks really pretty. And I'm like, look, I'm going to do that, I promise you. So he wouldn't let us do it at his training because he didn't want anybody breaking their neck. But I started utilizing it in my matches and it went over pretty well. Just, I'm very flexible. I got a nice bridge. So working on, you know, adding different suplexes and stuff, just utilizing my flexibility. I think I've done like over 200 classes of hot yoga. It's a crazy freak accident that I got injured because I'm just like always keeping my body finely tuned, whether it's CrossFit or yoga and stuff. But yeah, I think I have a very hybrid mixed style. You know, it was my fourth or fifth match. I don't know if you've heard of the wrestler Joey Janela. Independent. Yeah, he was like, look, he's like, I know, you know, you don't want to get hurt or anything, but I want you to just jump to the top, cross body to the outside. I'm going to push in the barricade, dive over the barricade. I'm like, all right, let's do it. So it's like Lance is teaching us, all right, don't do all these dives and everything. Just keep it basic. Literally fourth match, third match, I've already done two dives to the outside.
Here's the difference, though. You learned properly. You understand the foundation and the foundation, the initial stages of psychology. So you know that it's too much, but you're doing it because, like you mentioned, you have to make a name and that's what guys want to do. But that's going to end up in the long run helping you become a much better performer because you're going to figure that out very quickly, which sometimes takes guys years to figure out.
Yeah.
You know, I had Joey on the show and he's another guy that just kind of one of those, just he's making all this stuff happen just by making it happen.
He just gets it.
Yeah, exactly. So you're going to try and go like worldwide, talk to the UK, that sort of an idea, or you're just trying to stick to the States for now?
So I'm really interested in just the Japanese, the route. I really enjoy their wrestling. I always end up watching Okada or Kenny or Shibata, you know what I mean? So I really like that style. I'm almost, my suspension of disbelief is almost instant when I watch those matches. And I just get lost in it. So I've had the opportunity through somebody to perhaps send some film over to Guido and maybe get on with their program over there. But that's obviously going to be on hold right now with my injury. And I do want to generate some really high quality matches and footage before I start sending stuff over there. So,
which is smart. You know, it's interesting too. I think I might've read something. Did you tag with David Wood Smith Jr.? Are you going to, or was there thoughts about it?
So, you know, everybody and their brother claims to be a promoter, you know, booker nowadays. So I was contacted by a gentleman in London and he said, hey, we're going to bring you in. You know, I've contacted Harry Smith. We're going to tag you guys together and all that. But that fell through. So it was cool. I got to meet Harry up in Calgary. So we hung out a couple times. One time was at a show he was booked on. Him and Jeff Jarrett were on the show. It was RCW.
Was that the one Jarrett was really wasted?
Yeah, it was actually. So there's a couple headlines I was present for up there. It was the one where Jarrett was drunk or whatever. But God bless him. You know, he's got help and everything. Hall of Fame. So proud of him. But the other one was in Harry saved that woman's life on the bridge.
Ooh, tell us about that story.
Yeah, so Harry, you know, he's dressed in this blue full kimono suit. Looks like a superhero.
Such a weirdo.
And when he shows up to the shows, that's, you know, he dresses, when he shows up to his wrestling shows, he's in full, you know, white mink fur, you know, just the whole 20 yards of how luxurious can you look. And he's like, you want to meet up and watch the pay-per-view tonight? I can't remember which one it was, but I was going to hang out with Bruce Hart and Harry and Diana.
Yeah.
His mother. And they were at one of the old TV, or not TV, but cameramen that worked for Stampede. So, you know, just some old friends getting together. And I was like, all right, so I'll meet you there. I get there, and he's like, meet there at 6:30. Well, it's like 7 o'clock. He's not there yet. You know, pay-per-view is about to start. And pay-per-view starts. And I'm like, where's he at? And then finally they pull up, and he comes in the house, and him and his mother, and he's just shaking. And we're just like, is everything all right? And he's like, hey, man. He's like, you got another one of those beers? I just need to chill out. So, I give him a beer. And he just sits down, and it's just like, he's on his phone. He's like, you know, just like, this dude's like shaking. I'm like, what's going on? And then finally they break it down. He's like, yeah, I just saved this woman's life off this bridge. She was going to commit suicide. We were driving by, and you can just imagine, like, he looks like a superhero. He gets out of the car.
He's 6'5".
Yeah, yeah. Dives on her, you know, probably puts her in some jiu-jitsu yeah. move and just
that's what he's apparently saying, like, you know, you can't escape, so don't even try.
Yeah, don't
I'm a trained jiu-jitsu expert or whatever. Yeah.
I couldn't escape if that man got his hands on me. He's an absolute monster and just one of the nicest people I've ever met. And he told me all the cool restaurants to go to and the Persian food. And
well, there's
and
a little bit of a connection between you guys because his dad passed away. Obviously, Davey and Gilman teamed together for years. You know, it's almost like you could start a club with Benoit's son and with Owen's son. And Owen's son, I don't know if he's even knows anything about what's going on with wrestling or whatever, but this whole crew of guys that have all passed away and have these sons that are around, you know?
And there's so much potential with the Harts, like you said. There's so many Harts in Calgary. Yeah, it's like John Hart, Matt Hart, you know, meet all these. Yeah. They had 12 kids, and then those 12 kids each had 12 kids. Yeah. So it's like there's just there's 500 Harts. And
it's like the Bible.
Know, yeah, you're never done meeting them all and stuff. But yeah, a lot of potential with people. And I think some people don't want to do the same thing that their parents did, or maybe they're tired of being compared to their parents, and so they want to branch out and do different things, and I understand that and all that. And you know, maybe if I had grown up with my father, I might have been the same way, like, oh no, you know, my dad's trying to shove wrestling down my throat, you know push it away. But I since I was taken away from it for so long, it's like it was just like I was starving forever. Right, for my whole life, sure. I was starving, and now it's like all these fans are connecting with me. And
is your mother still alive?
Yeah, so my mother, you know, it's quite a long story with her. Haven't had the best relationship with her. You know, without getting into too many details, just a lot of neglect and abuse from my stepfather. I ended up moving out of the house when I was 13.
Wow.
Lived with my best friend, Paul, for a couple years.
Shout out to Paul.
Yeah, shout out to Paul. And lived with him and his single mother, who you know, took care of me more than anyone had at that point. And that's when my grandmother passed away. So then my aunt, which is my dad's sister, her name's Linda Pillman. She's basically my guardian angel, the closest thing I've ever had to a mother. And she came down and took care of me. She bought a whole house with her, you know, with her whole retirement, you know, just bought a house right off the front, cash, you know, here you go.
Yeah.
And was like, I want you to be able to go to this high school, you know, really nice high school at Dixie Heights, and keep your friends and keep playing football and lacrosse and stuff. So I've really got to thank her for just having that foundation for me. And in the same sense, like, her mother, my grandmother, did that for my dad, you know, like had a base for him where he could stay while he was pursuing wrestling and stuff like that.
What does your Aunt Linda think about you getting into the business?
Oh, she loves it. And it's funny because growing up, I would have never thought that how much she knows. Like, she knows a lot about wrestling and stuff. Like, she even knows all the lingo, but she would never say that around me. But now that I'm in the business, she, like, gets it all, you know? So it's cool. And she'd tell me, oh, your dad, he tore his shoulder, and he was out for 3 months, and he was studying. It's like, you know, it's like literally the same story, you know? Like, I tear out my knee, I'm going to be out for 3 to 6 months. So, and it's so different now. Like, you guys used to have to, like, mail each other tapes and stuff. Like, you guys used to have to send mail. I've never sent mail in my whole life, so I have the luxury of just looking up online. Oh, I want to watch AJ, I want to watch Ricochet, I want to watch these guys. I can just do it at the click of the finger. And I think a lot of us younger guys, we take that for granted, you know. We think, oh, you know, I'll just look it up later or something. We don't actually realize that how much work you guys put in to build this industry and to really just create it, you know. You guys did so much.
Do you ever watch your dad's stuff?
Yeah, I watch a lot of it. It's funny because I always ask people, what are your top 10 favorite, you know, best wrestling matches of all time? And they always include my dad's match with Liger on there. And I've probably watched that match 500 times because I'm just like, what was the most innovative thing in high flying at that period of time, and you watch it, and it's like, okay. And then you watch stuff today, and it's just like, oh my gosh, you know, just
that would be an interesting match for you to have versus Liger.
Yeah,
you know, it's always funny when you see guys that you knew and their kids are growing up, and I'm not quite that generation with Davey and Owen, those guys, but it's still pretty cool to me. I remember going to a pay-per-view in like 1990 at the Silver Dollar Action Center in Calgary, SummerSlam, and seeing this little kid running around with dirt all over his face, just causing shit. He was probably 3 or 4 years old, and it was Harry.
Oh,
Harry is going up and doing this, you know what I mean? But the best Pillman match for me was the 5-on-5 Calgary Stampede match. That was called the pay-per-view for WWE.
Okay.
The Hart Foundation.
Yeah.
That crowd reaction was insane.
Yeah.
You know, Brian was such a good character.
Yeah.
And I think that's why there's been this resurgence in interest in Brian Pillman. A, when he was younger, he was a great wrestler, but as he got older and after he got hurt, he relied more on his personality and character. Very important.
And I think that speaks to the longevity of people's careers, you know, just like, you know, it's not all about the moves and stuff. Like people ask, oh, what was your dad's finisher? I'm like, they didn't have finishers back then. The Air Pillman was just a signature move. You know, he did a lot of head scissor stuff and, you know, he dove on people and drop kicks. But back then it was more about getting the crowd in the palm of your hands. And I feel like his greatest talent was he just owned the crowd. You know what I mean? He just had them in his grasp.
A very believable character. You know, and the, of course, the famous Pillman story where... did you hear the podcast I did with Dave Meltzer about...
Oh, yeah. I loved it.
Just the fact he was able to work the whole industry into getting WCW and Bischoff to fire him because he was trying to work everyone that got fired and then taking those fire papers and going to get hired by Vince. I mean, it's one of the most genius double crosses, if you
he
will.
He was working the workers,
exactly. Can never happen again. You know?
Oh, no. Not with all the bells and whistles and corporate red tape and everything today. Yeah.
Twitter and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. But do you...
I wonder how he would have tackled social media, because I've read an article that he was on AOL and had like a fan base on AOL group chat. So it's like he was social media before social media was social media, you know? So he was doing all this before Facebook, and he kind of had them, and he would feed them stuff, whether it was a work or, you know, stuff. And my mom would, you know, kind of mandate the groups while he was on the road and stuff, like, oh, Pim, you know, he's coming home in a couple of days and stuff. So I always wonder, he would have just owned social media. So he would have found a way, because like so many people tell me, oh, your dad was 10, 20 years ahead of his time. And I'm like, well, what would that be like today? What would he have been like today? So
a lot of ways, I think you're right, ahead of his time, which is why he was able to pull it off. You know, like I said, to me, just, I remember, actually, I wrote, my fourth book just came out. It's called No is a Four-Letter Word. And it's principles of things that I've learned over the years on how I made it and did all these different things. And they're all bits of advice that either I got from a person or a fictional character, you know, family member, whatever. And one of them is the Brian Pillman principle, which is if you want to make it, do something different.
Yep.
Do something that's never been done before.
And
that's what he told me.
Yeah.
In only very minimal interactions. I only met him maybe one day. His last day in ECW was my first, basically.
Yeah.
And that's the only time we ever interacted, and that was the advice that he gave me, and I just never forgot it. But it was very, very smart piece of intelligence there, for sure.
Yeah, I remember hearing that in the podcast, and me and my buddy kind of speculated, but now I'll ask you, what was that one thing that you think you did in your career that nobody else had done?
I don't think it's just one thing, dude. I think it's always just playing against, against type, you know, always reinventing myself, always, you know, different costumes or a different look every week or whatever it may be, just trying to be different from everybody else. And if you look through my body of work, there is differences, different move here and there, different look, different personality, completely ditching, you know, all this Y2J character and coming out in a suit and tie and being very quiet and being very angry and, you know, very, very Pillman-like. This year, when I did the thing with Kenny Omega, Meltzer said it was a very Pillman thing to do. Just fool everybody and show up.
Yeah.
You know, but that once again, that's the influence of this guy that's been gone for so many years. Mm-hmm. But here you are coming in. And the thing that I like about you, we just met today, is you're obviously smart. You got a college degree. You're not just some guy that's like just trying to make a couple bucks, brother. Like, you have making this decision, but you also did it very smart with this pressure of being a Pillman.
Yeah. And it's funny, I just talking about having a degree and having a backup plan. When I met Christian at Creative Pro, one of the matches I had.
What's Creative Pro?
Creative Pro is Pat Buck and Kurt Hawkins. They have a school in the Northeast. Yeah,
also,
New York.
Christian came in to be like a trainer, trainer.
They actually did a show.
Uh-huh.
They did a charity show. And Christian was like a guest, like a meet and greet type deal. So I met him, and it was funny. He was like, I did the opposite. He's like, I took out my student loans and didn't go to college. He's like, I didn't want to backup plan. He's like, I wanted to either fail or just, you know, he's like, my only option was to succeed in wrestling.
Right.
So I kind of liked that. And I was like, you know what? I wish I had, I'd have done that. But in a way, everything, you know, was working out.
I did the same thing to you, though, because I met Jesse the Body Ventura on the street in Winnipeg one day, just walking down the street, like, holy shit, that's Jesse the Ventura. And he was really cool. He hung out with me way longer than I would ever hang out with some kid that came up to me on the street.
Yeah.
I'd be trying to get rid of the kid. But he said, you know, you got to have something to fall back on. And I went into journalism school.
Okay.
But the skills I learned in journalism paid off what we're doing right now. So everything that you've done will help you in the business. Like you mentioned, knowing social media and technology and all that other stuff. It's a smart move. Who were some of your favorites when you started really watching wrestling?
So when I was younger, I loved the Hardy Boys. Obviously, just loved them to death. I try not to be a super mark when I go to these shows and meet people because it's like, oh, I'm in the business now. You know, try not to ask them for a picture, but I couldn't help but get a picture with Matt and Jeff. And
but you've met them before,
yeah. And the coolest thing was at the memorial shows when I was a young kid. I know you appeared
did one of them, yeah.
Yeah, you did Lodge, one of the early ones, and I went in out with them in their entrance.
With the Hardys?
Yeah, and Lita and everything. Yeah, so
when
I ran
like,
out
what,
there.
10 or something? Or?
I think these were early on, so I was probably like 5 or 6.
Oh, wow.
These are one of the very first ones because they went on a hiatus for a while.
Yeah.
And then 10 years later, they did another one, and I was 13. And
I think they did one in 99. So, yeah.
99, so I would have been 6 or 7. Yeah. And so I've always just had a soft spot for Matt and Jeff and just meeting them. And it was cool because they had just. They just went to WrestleMania and got those belts, but the WWE was like, look, you can finish your indie dates.
Oh, right.
And I think it's cool that there's so much crossover now.
Yeah.
Like this would have never happened, you know, years ago.
Right.
They would never let you go somewhere else. And you know, they're starting to realize that the competition is benefiting everyone, you know, so they let them finish out their indie dates. So I'm like, holy crap, these are the Raw tag team titles, you know, I'm just like hanging out with them. And you know, just this was before I even started training, you know, so just kind of just enjoying that. But yeah, I really enjoy them. Obviously, like watching my dad and stuff. I'm very inspired by Kenny Omega. I don't know what it is. Maybe he reminds me a little bit of my father. You know, obviously you.
Same hair.
I do one of your moves in the ring. So clearly, I'm inspired by you and just your hybrid style of just being able to do it all and just also the larger than life personality. I think I really relate to that kind of that rock star. Lifestyle or, you know, just going out there and being so confident that people just hate how confident you are. You know what I mean? You're just
right.
Bleeding confidence that it's just like they wish they had it. So it's like you're almost a heel, but you're really like people want to be you. So you're really not a heel. You know, you're just like, all right, I love you, but I hate that I love you, you know?
Do you, now that you have this injury for 3 months, what are you going to do? Are you going to study something or it seems like you're not just going to sit there?
Yeah. So I have this cool idea that I was going to do and, I was watching some Dean Malenko and Chris Benoit stuff and I was like, you know what? I'm going to actually take a PowerPoint or something and I'm going to find every hold I can and it'll probably just be a bunch of slides of Dean, but like, I'm going to, you know, I saw, TJ Perkins doing some cool stuff and I just really want to step up my technical game because I think I could do that injured. You know, I could find a buddy and just put holds on him and, you know, not running around.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do that. I'm going to do a slideshow. I'm going to take a picture and put, you know, different holds. I'm going to name them all because so many of them don't have names. You know, we just do them and we don't even think about it. But I commented on TJ's picture. I was like, oh, what do you call that? A cravat crab? Because it was like a single leg crab, but he had a cravat hold on it. And he was like, oh, I didn't even think about that. We'll call it that. So I'm going to just name all these holds. I'm going to try to get 1,000 of them by the time I'm back.
1,000 holds.
1,001.
It'd be the literal man of, you know, the man of 1,004 holds, but I forgot about 700 of them.
Yeah.
But you're going to be the literal 1,000 man of 1,000 holds.
Yeah, I figure that's a good exercise. And just taking notes on matches, you know, different ways to get into this stuff. Like I, you know, watch a match with you and AJ. AJ's, he's just phenomenal.
Awesome.
Right. You know, that's the word to describe him. So, yeah. And it would, you know, it wouldn't matter what he wore or what he did. Yeah. He's just good.
Yeah. He's one of those special talents for sure.
Different ways to get into that, those setups with that, with different drop kicks and stuff, you know. Like, I try to keep it simple. You know, I'm not the flippiest person ever. I do want to be. I aspire to do the things, you know, to have all the moves that Ricochet has. I know that that kid's wrestled for 15 years, and he's still really young. So, I mean, it takes time. You know, it takes time to add to your repertoire, safely add to your repertoire. I got injured doing a kick in the corner, you know. So
that's the way it always is.
Yeah. So yeah. I just got to slow down. I think I was going too fast.
Everybody goes too fast when you start. You just can't help yourself.
Not just in the ring, but with getting booked and traveling. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
Just not even second guessing where I'm working. I went to a show, you know, not trying to dog on any promoters or anything, but I get there. And, you know, I get paid right off the bat, but they had to cancel the show. 400-something fans are in this building. The show's supposed to start at 7:30, but the doctor didn't show up. So it's like I need to vet where I'm going more. I need to slow everything down. And I think that this was my wake-up call. This was my putting the brakes on it, so to speak. I would have rather have, like, slowly put the brakes on it instead of just rear-ending somebody. But I just rear-ended somebody, yeah. And now I got to, you know, pay the insurance and pay the medical bills. And
what's your overall plan? What's your end game?
I think I want to make this into a career, you know.
Well, obviously, but where yeah. though? Where, oh where, yeah, where would you like to
yeah.
go?
We all want to make it to the WWE, and
is that at WWE?
Yeah. And I think that would be a great place for me. Just, you know, so many guys would be willing to help me navigate that political structure. You know, guys like Regal, guys like, I think it's funny. I'll go ahead and say this now. I believe that Triple H changed my diapers when I was a kid. So,
really?
So yeah. So I think the 1 year that they were in WCW together, I tried to add up the years because my mother told me this, right? So sometimes she says things that may or may not be true. But when I met Shad Gaspard, he's like, "You better tell him that when you meet him. You know, that'll be cool." So I think just as far as coming back to the wrestling family, I think going to the WWE is where a lot of my father's friends and family members were.
The thing is about Brian is. Almost everybody liked him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you mentioned Regal. Have you talked to Regal?
Yeah, so I got in touch with Regal, and he actually, before I started training with Lance, he offered for me to tour the Performance Center. So I went down there and checked it out. I was like, wow, it's amazing, you know. And I'm not someone that's just going to be like, hey, you know, give me a job, you know. Yeah. So I was like, you know, I talked to one of their producers, Ryan Katz, and he was like, Lance, this is a great place to go get your foundation. And he was like, when you're ready, you know, just send us some stuff when you're ready. And I've yet to send them anything. I want my first impression with them to be just top notch.
You got a lot to live up to. But, yeah. You know, like I said, if you show some potential, mm-hmm. you'll get a shot.
Yeah.
Because, A, you deserve it and you've earned it. And, B, there's a lot of goodwill towards Brian Pillman.
Yeah, sometimes that P word, potential, it can be harmful, and everybody's blowing that smoke up me, and they're like, oh, you got all this potential, this pedigree, but I think it really started to show when I stepped through the curtain for the first couple of times, and I was like, okay, I really do have somewhat of an it factor. It's not just a bunch of people
That's blowing smoke up
my
when
ass.
You have that
yeah.
confidence, too.
Yeah.
You know, do you think that? Because, like I always say to some of the guys, there's no rush. You know, WWE is not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Would you rather tour around and do what AJ did and do what Kenny's doing, or would you rather go quicker to the WWE? What's kind of like your thoughts?
I think I would benefit from a just like, you know, having gone to college and had a corporate job before. I think I would benefit from the structure of the WWE. I think it would ground me. I think I'm somebody that without those limitations and without that added discipline, I might not progress as quickly. But I also do enjoy the freedom of the independence and the traveling and going different places and really experiencing that. And not everybody has the name and stuff, the ability to market themselves worldwide. But, you know, like, I've had people in France and Europe contact me in Germany to go over there. So it's like, why not? You know what I mean? Why not travel? Why not send some tapes over to New Japan and just see what I can do? Maybe get involved with their program. Because like you said, WWE is not going anywhere. I've got some ties and some connections there. And that, to me, like, you look at, you know, you look at guys that like AJ, you know, and Ricochet, they wrestled for 15-20 years before they ever made it there,
right?
But they were the best wrestlers ever before they went there. But
Samoa
that's like
Joe,
yeah Samoa Joe, yeah, guys like that. So it's like, There's and you, I mean, you look at my dad. It didn't matter what acronym he was working for. He was always on top, and you know, at top of his game, and always trying to be the best. Whether it was ECW, WCW, you know, NWA, whatever, you know, WWF. It was you're always trying to be the best you can be. And and I think if you try to live a life where you're, oh, I'm gonna make it to this destination, and then I've made it, then you're gonna fall by the wayside. It should just be a constant,
right?
Always trying to be on top. And yeah. And the different places you go, there's no final destination. You know, like you are now a singer and a rock star. Like, you might not have thought that when you were wrestling and stuff. You were like, oh, I'm just going to try and make it to WWE. But now you're just, like, keeping going and going, doing new things, different avenues. Mm-hmm. And with technology, we have the ability to branch out and do those things more easily. And I think that's what it's going to be.
Last few things. What have you learned the most from, like, the legacy of your dad, reading these books, watching videos, interviews that you've seen?
Like, the most about my dad?
Yeah, what have you learned from him, from this business? Is it a character? Is it athleticism? A mindset? I mean, is there something that Brian Pillman, your dad,
taught you
from beyond the grave, so to
speak? Yeah, yeah. I guess the biggest thing I've learned, and it's kind of helped me grow, you know, growing up without a father is probably one of the most detrimental things to a young man, just because.
Sure.
And I, you know, I hate to say this, but a single mother cannot raise a boy to be a man.
You need your dad. You know,
she can raise a boy, and I feel like you see that in our generation today. You see a lot of soft guys, you know, growing up. And I think what I've learned from his story is just how tough he was, and how hard, and how much of he was truly an alpha. He was an alpha male. And it's because he sought out mentors. He sought out guys like Kim Wood.
Yes.
He sought out all these older men who really lived that, you know, tough lifestyle and really grew up with that. So I think that's the biggest lesson. Without him, I need to find older guys in the business, guys that express their masculinity and don't hold back. And really, like you said, like, say no. You know, knowing to say no. Like, so many people, they want to be the nice guy. They want to do favors for everybody. But you got to know when to say no. You got to know when to stick up for yourself. And he was a fighter, too. He was a tough son of a gun. I mean, you read that book, it's like he was a street fighter. He, you know, he break people's arm at the bar if they talk. And he was, you know, he wasn't a huge guy back then.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy to think that I go to shows and wrestle and people consider me huge, and I'm 215. Yeah.
You're actually in shape too, which is a rare thing.
Yeah. So it's like, I just, you know, I just need to keep that mental mindset of being on top and being strong and knowing when to tell people no. And people want me to come out and work for free. Just be like, you know, no, like, you know, this is a business. Yeah. Like, my father didn't die for wrestling so I could go work your indie for $0 just because you think, oh, I'm going to get some exposure. You know, it's like, and a lot of guys, they're working for free now. And Lance hates that. He's like, if you leave here, don't go work for free. He's like, you know, killing our business and stuff. And I just think it plays to the social culture of today, and we need to bring back our roots and go back in time.
Do you talk to Lance at all?
Yeah, I message Lance all the time, and he's busy with his students and stuff, but he always gets back to me. And it's funny because he's really, you know, he'll be short with you in messages, but when you talk to him in person, he could just talk for hours, and you can't get him to shut up. But it's like, I guess he doesn't like typing, but as soon as you talk to him in person, it's like, gosh, you know, he can go on forever. He loves talking, but just so much, and he's willing to impart it too. Mm-hmm. You know, you got some of these old school guys that, you know, they want you to figure it out. You know, they want to speak in riddles and stuff, but Lance isn't like that. He really, really just breaks it down. And, you know, he's a great teacher. I think he was definitely made to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's his strength. Yeah.
I mean,
really
he trained at OVW. He brought up a lot of the women on the women's roster in the WWE and stuff. He's just, he's very good at teaching specifically the women on how to be better workers and better athletes and stuff too. So I think he's benefiting this industry as a whole.
Last question, what's your favorite match that you've ever had?
My favorite match that I've ever had is probably
the 26th,
my most recent one, where I won my first championship. So it's funny, I had my first match on December 18th, which is Stone Cold's birthday.
Oh, yeah.
And then I won my first belt on March 16th, which is Austin 316 day. So I won this belt. And it's funny because they didn't even tell me I was going to win it. They're just like, yeah, we're going to, Jonathan's going to defend his title, Jonathan Wolf. And it was actually the first time I wrestled somebody for the second time. So, you know, the first time it's like, okay, we, you know, timing was off on a few things.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you get that person's timing. So then this one was even better. Mm. So this is the first time I've had the chance to like improve upon working with somebody. And, you know, we got, it was a no DQ match. We got all our shit in, had so much fun. I DDT'd him onto the floor. You know, it was cool.
What
and
championship was it?
It was the WCWO championship.
WCWO?
WCWO, yeah. World Class Wrestling Outlaws.
Okay.
In Indianapolis.
Nice.
The promotion's been around for 30 years or something.
Wow.
Yeah. So his father wrestled and his father's father wrestled. And they've
the promoter?
It's the kid that wrestled.
Oh, Jonathan
yeah.
Wolf.
Yeah,
gotcha.
So his grandfather was the Indiana kid, I believe.
Okay.
And he's IK3. So he's a third generation, and he's only 18.
Yeah, yeah,
but kid
yeah.
can work.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you go to these matches a lot of times. And
the kid can work.
The kid can work. Yeah, so he's my vet, and he's calling all the stuff on the fly, but he's letting me call some stuff. And that's why I think it was my best match, because we had a bunch of spots.
Mm-hmm.
But if we just did our spots, it would have been a 10-minute match. We went 24 minutes. I've only had one other 23-minute match, but I always enjoy going as long as I can.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe one day I can go an hour, like Kenny or you. Or, yeah. But you get blown up.
Good stuff, man. You're the WCWO champion, Brian Pillman II. Dude, I think you got a lot of good things coming for you in the future.
I appreciate you, brother. It's been quite an uplifting time here. I was kind of devastated with my injury, but if I can kind of keep marketing myself and stay on the social media and work on my hold book and stuff, yeah.
If you learn 1,000 holds, dude, next time you're on, I want you to list them.
Yeah,
thanks, man. All right, follow Brian Pillman II on Twitter. He's at Flying Brian Jr., so you can check him out in the ring once his knee is fully rehabbed, which it is. He's now part of the New Heart Foundation in MLW with Teddy Hart and Harry Smith. And follow Chris Jericho's Cruise on the Twitter at Jericho_Cruise. Everything is announced at this point. We're now 1 month away from setting sail, October 27th from Miami to the Bahamas, and there's still time to get cabins. We are 95% sold out, less than 50 cabins to go, but they're still out there. So if you want to come join the fun, you got to book now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And remember, everything is all-inclusive in the price of your cabin. All the food, concerts, live podcasts, stand-up shows, meet and greets, autograph sessions, wrestling matches. Only thing you pay for is alcohol and gambling. So come aboard and make history. Big main event, the Alpha Club versus the Bullet Club, the Bucks of Jericho, or is it Y2 Jackson versus Kenny Omega, Cody, and Marty Scurll. We also got Impact versus Ring of Honor, the Slaughter on the Water, the No Rules Deck Match, Sammy Callahan versus Marty Scurll. We got the Dream Match, LAX versus the Young Bucks, and we've got the giant 10-man elimination tag team war of the Young Bucks, Adam Page, Marty Scurll, and Cody versus Brian Cage, Johnny Impact, LAX, and Sammy Callahan. You're not going to see those matches anywhere else. We also got a Live Talk is Jericho with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Live Talk is Jericho remembering Eddie Guerrero with Conan and Rey Mysterio, who will be on the cruise. Live Talk is Jericho with the entire Bullet Club. Live Talk is Jericho with Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler. Mick Foley doing his 20 Years of Hell stand-up show. That's going to be hilarious. Jim and the King, JR and the King doing their JR and the King live show. And the first round of the Sea of Honor tournament has been announced. Bracket A, Lethal versus Whitmer, Daniels versus Delirious, Skrull versus Titus, Young versus Gordon. Bracket B, Mark Briscoe versus Ferrara, Adam Page versus Kazarian, Cheeseburger versus Beer City Bruiser, Jay Briscoe versus Kenny King. Of course, we've got Brandi Rhodes, Mandy Leon, Kelly Klein, Sumi Sakai, the Women of Honor, special guest cruise director SoCal Val, special guest Noelle Foley helping out with a little hosting as well, and live music from Fozzy, Corey Taylor of Slipknot and Stone Sour, Phil Campbell, the Bastard Sons, King, The Stir, the Dave Spivak Project, the Cherry Bomb, Shoot to Thrill, who are going to be in an upcoming Talk is Jericho, the world's best female AC/DC cover band, Blizzard of Ozzy, the world's best Ozzy cover band, live podcast from Keep It at 100 versus Kill on the Town, Beyond the Darkness telling some scary tales, Colt Cabana and Marty DeRosa doing their unprofessional wrestling show, Busted Open Radio, Dave LaGreca will be there, live comedy from Brad Williams, Craig Gass, Ron Funches, Sal and Q from the Impractical Jokers. Book your cabin now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Come join the fun. Come make history. Go do it now. You still got time, and you still got time for this Wednesday. Classic Album Clash returns. It's Van Halen, 5150 versus 1984. David Lee Roth's last Van Halen record and Sammy Hagar's first Van Halen record. It's me and Rich Ward from Fozzy, along with Michael Starr and Satchel from Steel Panther. It's going to be hilarious. It's going to be a great return of the Classic Album Clash this Wednesday. Have a great weekend. Come see us in Tampa tonight. Come see us in Fort Lauderdale tomorrow. FozzyRock.com. Have a great time all the time. That's my philosophy, Monty. And we'll see you next week right here on Talk is Jericho. Ah, yeah!